What you're about to hear is 90 minutes of solid and personal honesty of the highest order as the legendary Pete Townsend joins host Timothy White for a North American radio event, Pete Townsend, The Iron Age. Using his latest solo album, The Iron Man, as a starting point, Pete Townsend takes us through a riveting examination of his creative process, detailing both the personal and artistic side of his astounding music. Although best known until the 1970s as the flamboyant bandleader of The Who, Pete Townsend sits down to trace his solo career, telling the real stories behind 9 solo records, plus a fascinating unfulfilled project called Lifehouse that yielded such Townsend classics as Behind Blue Eyes. In addition, Pete Townsend will treat us to original raw demo tracks recorded for his latest album, The Iron Man, including the world radio debut of unreleased music from that project. It's Pete Townsend, The Iron Age, an intimate history of a rock immortal straight from the man himself. So let's join host Timothy White and his special guest, Pete Townsend, on Timothy White's Rock Stars.
We can argue about what we think that the modern song is for, but I can just tell you what I've used it for. I've certainly used it to pursue innovation and originality. I've tried to use songs to seduce, to make people long for me, to keep people away, to threaten people, to define territory, to talk about my fear, but also to turn people towards God, to give people hope who haven't got any hope, people that might feel inadequate because of the way they look, because they're too fat, too thin, or whatever. So some of the things that I've used songs for are very, very good, and some of them are very selfish. In the 60s, the purpose of songs changed. You know, the kind of songs that my parents used to listen to were about relationships. True love, conviction, romance, nostalgia, sentimentality, good, wholesome sex, kissing full on the lips. What our generation don't seem to be able to put up with is singers singing songs. We want the writers to sing the songs. A song is a message. A song is a letter. Nothing more, nothing less. I think I've also tried to raise people's consciousness about what's really happening in the world and what has been happening in the world since the last war, which has been my preoccupation. And a lot of the anger which is currently in rock music is my anger. It's a very crude thing, really, music. You know, look at the two crappy little things that most of us have in our hi-fi system to make it work. Two bits of black cardboard connected to a magnet with a couple of bits of wire. Unbelievably crude, but look at the emotions that it can actually produce.
This is a Pete Townsend edition of Timothy White's Rock Stars, and the bulk of the show is going to be about The Iron Man, Pete's new solo record. Pete, welcome.
Thanks.
Pete, the story of The Iron Man is essentially a saga of living creatures at odds with each other, out of fear and out of miscomprehension.
What I liked about The Iron Man story and what fired me up is it just reminded me of my life. And I've been writing about my life for years with great success. And obviously touching the spot with a lot of other people who feel the same way as I do about their lives. And so I thought I'd take that pathway again.
Now, I wonder if there was a kind of a post-war sensibility from your own experience woven through Iron Man.
Yeah, definitely. The war didn't stop for me because my father was in an orchestra, which was an Air Force orchestra called the Squadron Airs. And my mother was a singer in an Air Force orchestra called the Sydney Torch Orchestra. They met and got married. And the war went on, as far as they were concerned. They stayed in uniform until I was 5 years old. And music to me was about the Air Force and about men in uniform. But there was, you know, there was definitely a function to my father's life, which was to pretend that there was no tragedy, to play romantic music for people who were separated from their loved ones or who had actually lost their loved ones in battle. So music for me has always been a lot more than just entertainment. In my family, I remember the day that my father kind of handed me over the function that he felt that he had been carrying up until the 60s, you know, and he said, you know, things have changed, Pete, now it's your turn.
What were those circumstances?
Well, those circumstances were that I was just into art school at 16 years old, and I was making about £30 a week with the band, playing American officers' men's clubs in London. We used to play one in particular called Douglas House, which was an Air Force club, a USAF club. And they would have country music bands come and visit and stuff. But because of my parents' connections, we got this date. And eventually, the band that we replaced was my father's band.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's interesting for me because I loved the music that my parents played. You know, I loved that big band stuff. I loved the writing of Cole Porter and Gershwin and the, you know, the lyrics of Johnny Mercer and all that stuff. And I still love that craftsmanship. It's just that it was inadequate.
In the song Dig in The Iron Man, the farmers who say are saying, we old men, we've seen two wars, are saying that we've lived through a horror, we don't want to live through it again. People are very, very frightened of the Iron Man. They want to dig a hole to trap this guy and end what they think is a reign of terror. The little boy expresses his emotion in a much more direct and much more original way.
What you actually have, really, from Hogarth is probably the only true response, which is curiosity.
What kind of mood were you trying to convey with Dig?
The idea that work will save us. Working hard will save us. We can dig our way out of this. We can dig trenches. We can dig down. We can find treasure. There's more oil down there. There's more coal. We just have to dig, you know? And it's futile. And it's a kind of a bless their little cotton socks kind of feeling about it. You know, these are the old folks. This is the way they do things. Digging a hole in the ground is actually not going to solve their problems.
Well, Pete, you were kind enough to bring along your original raw demo version of Dig from The Iron Man. So let's listen to a bit of that, and then we'll go to the finished version from the album as performed by The Who.
We old ones have seen two wars. We old ones have seen two wars. When you're sick and afraid, there's danger around. Take a pick and a spade, cut into.
And now the final version from The Who. That was The Who's version of Dig from Pete Townsend's new Iron Man LP. And previous to that, we heard Pete's original demo version of the same song. I'm Timothy White on a Pete Townsend edition of Timothy White's Rock Stars. I'm going to be back with much more in just a moment. You've got somewhere to go. Catch a fare that's low. I'm Timothy White here with Pete Townsend, and we're discussing The Iron Man, his new solo album. In particular, A Friend is a Friend, the first single from that album. Pete, through the eye, say, of a young boy, the young character in The Iron Man, how would you describe friendship to someone who's never experienced it?
Your ideas about friendship are formed when you're very young. And I don't think you make friends when you're very young. Because I think when you're very young, I mean when you're between, say, the ages of about 3, when you first become conscious of other children, and say 11 or 12, I don't think you have friends then. I think you don't have friends because you don't need friends. You're just cool. You know, you just stay away from people that you don't like. If you're suspicious of anybody, you ostracize them, and if you can, you hang them on a hook. And you hang out with like people. You don't pretend to be anything that you're not. You don't try to change the world. You just groove along. But nonetheless, despicable creatures that we are when we're children. Absolutely despicable, hateful, spiteful, nasty, bloody-minded. We still think that the friendships we made when we were children are the kinds of friendships that we must have when we become adults. We've got to, you know, come from the same street or live next door to one another, and whenever you knock on my door and ask for a dollar, I give you one, and vice versa. I don't think that's what friendship is about. I think friendship is something which is proved. It's proved by what you do. It's proved by what other people do to you.
It's a process, a crucible.
Yeah, it's a process.
Or what is Hogarth learning about friendship, perhaps for the first time, when the farmers and everybody else, they've dug this pit, the Iron Man has fallen in, but a chord is struck between this 10-year-old boy and this big metal man.
I didn't actually write the song from a literal point of view. I wrote the song from the point of view of a boy who has actually suddenly realized that he's making his own world, you know, that he's writing his own future, and that that moment actually happens when he looks into the eyes of the Iron Man in the pit, and they start to throw earth over it, and he starts to realize that he wasn't afraid of the Iron Man, but he has helped trap him, and he has to share the responsibility. It's that that leads him to a questioning of the most important of all human ideas, which is the responsibility of a friend to a friend. And he also realizes at that moment that he is the Iron Man's friend, and probably his only friend.
That was A Friend is a Friend from Pete Townsend's new The Iron Man LP. Pete, let's go back through the chronology of your whole solo career, beginning with Who Came First, the album you put out in 1972. It was a big departure stylistically in so many ways from The Who, a departure from the big band sound. The songs were much more intimate and kind of offhanded. I think of one in particular called Sheridan Gibson, and I know that the setting for that was on the road, in the sense that you wrote it in a hotel room. Do you recall anything about that hotel room setting?
The only thing I know about it is that the hotel was called the Sheraton Gibson. I took the album that Bob Dylan had just put out with Johnny Cash, and he'd recorded about 20 songs. And I found it very inspiring, because a lot of the music wasn't very good. It was just sort of, you know, Dylan's ramblings, you know, just some of it was really quite bad. And I thought, I wonder what it would happen if I did that. So I turned on a tape machine and I sang off the top of my head, making the words up as I went along, 20 songs. And I can remember some of them now. One was called Mr. Tie-Dye. It was a song about John Sebastian and about the idea that dressing up in bright coloured clothes makes you a nice person. And one was Sheraton Gibson. Another one was a song called Classified. That was about reading the classified papers. I just made them up as I was going along. I never corrected the lyrics or anything. And then I played them all back, and they were all great. They're all kind of weird songs, but they were all really good. And Sheraton Gibson was one of them.
Song about homesickness, being on the road, in a hotel that you can barely recall except for the name itself. Well, let's listen to Sheraton Gibson, Pete Townsend.
Sheraton Gibson, playing my Gibson.
That was Sheraton Gibson from Pete Townsend's first solo project, Who Came First, in 1972. Pete, let's move along chronologically to your next solo move, which was Rough Mix, an album that you did in 1977 in collaboration with ex-Small Faces bassist and singer-songwriter Ronnie Lane. It was kind of a unique merger of each of your personalities and talents.
When I worked with Ronnie, what was actually happening was this, I suppose I was filling in time. I didn't really feel that the record was going to be that significant. Ronnie nagged me to make this record, and I agreed to do it. He was very, very hard up. He was my best friend at the time. And I really respected him for leaving the Faces. although there was a bit of a guilt trip going on, because when Ronnie Wood had asked me whether he should stay in the Faces or go and join the Stones, I said, are you kidding? You know, go and join the Stones. So I think maybe I'd been worried about what might happen to Ronnie Lane as a result of that. I can't remember. But I didn't go into the album all that willingly, and I didn't really enjoy making it very much. And I'm always amazed at what a nice record it turned out to be. What Ronnie was hoping is that we would write together. I'd always said that I couldn't write with anybody. I still find it very, very difficult even to contemplate. And it was in that session that I realised that Ronnie wasn't well. He couldn't really play. He could sing okay, but he couldn't play the bass. And I got angry with him about halfway through the session, because I just thought he was a drunk, you know, he was just a drunken pig, you know. And I mean, I don't know why I was being such a hypocrite. I used to drink far more than he did, but he was kind of falling over all over the place. And I got angry with him in the hallway, and I pushed him, just punched his right shoulder or something to emphasise the point, and he went flying down the hall. And it was then that I realised that, you know, that he was sick. And it was only a couple of years later that it emerged that he had MS.
Multiple sclerosis.
That's right, yeah. And with this record, and bullying me into doing it on the basis that, you know, Pete, if you don't help me, I'll starve to death, he very, very cleverly got me to start my solo career.
Some of the strongest songs on Rough Mix are the most informal. Keep Me Turning is this nice little love ballad about backstage passes.
I suppose I was going through kind of an early midlife crisis. I was writing songs about girls, mainly. All the songs were about girls. I mean, I was married, I was happy, but I was writing lots of songs about girls. And Keep Me Turning, I suppose, is a song about, you know, keep me young. Don't tell me that this is all there is. You know, don't tell me that I've got to stop now. Don't tell me that I can't ever be infatuated with somebody. Just allow me to go on doing what I'm doing. I like it. There's a line in it where I say, I want a hand in my backstage pass. I want the ritual to end, but the real thing to continue.
River's getting higher. No wood for the fire. They saw the Messiah, but I guess I missed him again. That brings my score to 110.
That was Keep Me Turning, a gentle ballad about love and backstage passes from Pete Townsend and Ronnie Lane from their 1977 Rough Mix album. I'm Timothy White here with Pete Townsend. We'll be back with much more music, some surprises including an unreleased Pete Townsend song, and a lot more after this.
Hi, I'm Larry. This is my brother Daryl, and this is my other brother Daryl.
I'm Timothy White, sitting here talking with Pete Townsend, and we're going through Pete's entire solo career. And Pete, I'd like to talk now about Empty Glass, which was your first official solo record in 1980. It had a lot of very tender songs in it, and it represented a new development, too, because you were doing the singing, whereas Who fans hadn't heard that from you at length very much. Were you self-conscious at all about stepping out of your image as band leader for The Who and becoming Pete Townsend's solo singer?
I still find it very difficult. I still find that the song is so connected to the face. That's sad, because I think the voice is so much better than the face, but there do you... I don't think I've ever written a love song. No, I don't think I have. I wouldn't know quite how to go about it. I've written cynical songs about love. No, I've never written a proper love song. I mean, this is much to the regret of all the women in my life, that I've never written a decent love song. You know, sometimes when I've written songs and I've dedicated them, you know, to my wife or to some other woman that I hold in high regard, you know, they're always very disappointed, you know. What's this? You know. It really comes down to how you feel about love. Maybe friendship is more important to me than love. Love is like a longing. It's like it's an energy. It's like magnetism. It's like gravity. And at its highest, it's about spiritual salvation.
Do you see Let My Love Open the Door as a love song?
No, it's about spiritual redemption and salvation, really. And I think Let My Love Open the Door was a song that would fit very well into some good, decent, wholesome Christian programming. I said to somebody the other day, a born-again Christian, I said, you know, I want to hear my stuff on Christian radio. You know, most of my songs are about Jesus. Most of my songs are about the idea that there is salvation and that there is a Saviour. I won't mention his name in a song just to get a cheap play.
Let My Love Open the Door, 1980, from Pete Townsend's Empty Glass solo LP, which marked Pete's decision to really get serious about a solo career. Pete, how about that? How'd you come to make that decision?
What I decided to do after the Who Are You album, Keith Moon had died, and therefore there was an opportunity to leave the Who completely. And most people said that I shouldn't do that, that The Who was more my property than anybody else's, you know, it was a lot of my heritage there. And although John and Roger were really important, that, you know, it was really my decision and they would have to abide by that. And at the same time, they were also saying, but this is your opportunity to develop as a solo artist. You can have it all. Basically, I think I made the wrong decision and I decided to make solo records and Who records alternately, and what I was going to do was take whatever songs were available and use them. Empty Glass was a song which we did with The Who for Who Are You, and which didn't work.
Was Rough Boys written for The Who, maybe?
No.
Oh, okay.
Now, how could Rough Boys be written for The Who? It's about homosexuality. It would be a song I would never have asked Roger to sing. What, in a sense, Rough Boys was about was a coming out. It was a kind of an acknowledgement of the fact that I'd had a gay life and that I understood what gay sex was about, that, you know, that it was not about, you know, faggery at all. It was about violence and savagery in a lot of senses. If men have a violence and a savagery which cannot be shared with women, then it can't be shared with them sexually. And so there's only one place for that violence and savagery sexually, and that's with other men. You know, a lot of adolescent displays are not for girls, they're for other men. You know, you wear leather jackets, you wear tight jeans, you learn how to stand on the street, you get involved in fights and stuff, you know, you hit somebody over the head with a bottle. You know that women aren't going to be impressed with that stuff, so who are you doing it for? Why are they such sexual things? Why are they such sexual messages? So in a way, it was like me saying, I am not that kind of macho rock star. And I think it was really important to me because 80% of The Who's audience were men. One of the things that stunned me when the record was released was suddenly I realised that I'd found a female audience. Just by being honest, you know, I understand how gay people feel. I understand and I identify. And I think to be a complete artist, you've got to have that. That truth is important. Unless you believe what you're singing about, then there is no truth.
Rough Boys, very intense rock, from Pete Townsend, 1980, the Empty Glass LP. I'm Timothy White, and we'll have much more from Pete Townsend in just a few moments. Stay where you are.
The Birds, the Lovin' Spoonful, the Turtles, the Beach Boys.
And now back to Timothy White with his guest, Pete Townsend.
Pete, we're talking about your solo projects, and there are so many other projects that you've undertaken, some of which were undefined in terms of there being something that The Who would proceed with or something that you'd play on your own. The 1972 Who Came First album, your first solo project, had a lot of music that was originally intended for Lifehouse, and I know that that was conceived in a kind of a Tommy sense. Basically, the storyline was of a deeply troubled future world in which rock and roll was forbidden. Now, where did that project go wrong?
Lifehouse was never a musical. What the music was for a performance. Where Lifehouse went wrong was that it was a theatrical work. We were supposed to be doing it in workshop with the Young Vic, which was an experimental theatre attached to the Old Vic in London. What we did is we took over the theatre. I wrote, you know, a number of songs and a rough story. And the idea was to perform the songs over a period of weeks. And we were going to have an open door policy for 2 weeks. The band were going to do this long, long, long concert with the doors open all the time. And in fact, we did a 3-day concert there and we kept the doors open for 3 days. And the only people that came were a load of little runts who just heckled all the way through the show and asked us to play whatever was at the top of the charts at the time. But the Lifehouse story is actually very, very, very simple. It's about the misuse of entertainment power and that the only art that tells the truth is music. There's some good songs came out of that album, that idea. Behind Blue Eyes is not a song about me. It was written to try to show how lonely it is for the powerful. Sometimes I write very effectively when I write about things that that other people feel. I mean, you know, I've got blue eyes and so has Roger Daltrey, but I've never felt that love was vengeance. And is it remarkable how many people just identify with that song from a personal point of view? How everybody feels that they're driven to deceit in order to feel love. So their love will always be like vengeance. It will always be painful for the recipient. Quite interesting.
That was Pete Townsend, Behind Blue Eyes, a song written for an unfulfilled project called Lifehouse. And the version we just heard was on Pete Townsend's Scoop LP. I'm Timothy White. We'll be back with much more with Pete Townsend after this.
Platoon, out of bed and into the bathroom!
Sergeant says my teeth are whips.
I'm Timothy White, and this is a Pete Townsend edition of Timothy White's Rock Stars. Pete and I are discussing his solo career from one end to the other, and actually, we're up to 1985, the White City album. The Who had broken up, and it was kind of a new life for you in a way. And I think that was reflected in the storyline of White City, which was about a racially integrated housing development in England.
White City actually was more about what had actually happened. You know, I'd left the band and I'd left show business, really. So I was dealing with another life, and I was looking at the kind of rock and roll venues for my adolescent roots with completely different eyes. You know, and one of those venues was White City, Shepherd's Bush, the Goldhawk Road, that whole area. The main message of White City was that wherever you stand and wherever you look, you can always see evil somewhere. Practically all of the young black social workers that I met on White City were obsessed with apartheid in South Africa.
Actually, there's a song on White City, Hiding Out, that has a kind of an African feel to it.
At one time, I was pursuing that really quite positively. I was going to do the whole album that way.
How did you come to write the song itself?
Hiding Out?
Yeah.
I read this account in a South African newspaper about a necklace burning. You know, they put a rubber tie around your neck and set light to it. And it was something that blacks tend to do with blacks, and
obviously a punishment of some kind.
Yeah. And the song was really about trying to find some kind of beauty in hiding, some kind of peace in being imprisoned, because the South African community is really imprisoned and they really do believe they've got no hope. You look at somebody like Mandela and you know, he's still in jail. He's been in jail for a long, long time. That's his life, you know. So he's obviously been one of those people who's actually had to try to find something good in what is essentially a really awful set of circumstances. And I think that in a way, that's what I felt when I physically, personally went back to White City. I suddenly felt, well, you know, life isn't that bad. They'd actually found that. You know, they'd found a way to live. You know, I remember the anger and the frustration in that kind of a housing estate when I was a young man.
Well, we should listen to Hiding Out from White City, 1985.
When you listen to it, see if you can guess which song I used as a model for the lyric.
What was the model? Would you want to speak the words
to that song? The Sound of Silence was the one. Da 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 da
That was Hiding Out, rock and roll from Pete Townsend with an African feel to it, from the White City, a Novel album of 1985. I'm Timothy White, sitting here talking with Pete Townsend and we're covering the entire span of his solo career. Pete, I know that you've brought some unreleased tracks from the Iron Man project with you here today, and a number of them have almost a musical comedy feel to them. Can you tell us about those?
There are three. Ball Bearing Ball. There's another one called Be a Brit. And they're kind of like Oliver-esque Cockney songs. And there's another one called Penny Drop. And it's where, in the story in Iron Man, Hogarth discovers, attracts the Iron Man's attention, is to clink a nail with a penknife. And I use this as a theme. Clink, 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 clink. And in this song, Penny Drop, the fox, the vixen, is like Hogarth's conscience, is telling him to use his brain and to use initiative and to come up with something which will help him. That song we could play, that would be fun for people to hear. It's very, very simple in the stage that it's at. It's just got piano and a bass and some drums on it.
Well, let's give our listeners a treat. What you're about to hear is the world radio debut of an unreleased song by Pete Townsend that he originally composed for the Iron Man project. This is the demo done by Pete himself, and it's called Penny Drop.
Every little car has to train to think, to scheme, to use his brain. Gotta be sharp, country wise. Must be ready to improvise.
That was Penny Drop, an unreleased song, one that didn't make it on the Iron Man LP by Pete Townsend. I'm Timothy White, and we'll have more behind-the-scenes stories about the making of the Iron Man with Pete Townsend in a moment.
Which side are you on?
I'm Timothy White here with Pete Townsend discussing his latest solo LP, The Iron Man. Pete, you've got a song on the album called Fire, which was a 1968 hit by The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. And it's interesting because you were the executive producer on that original song.
I worked it up with Arthur. I've got a couple of versions on tape on which I play guitar. Our managers and the band put a record label together in Britain called Track, and I suppose our most famous offering was Jimi Hendrix, who we signed before he even came to America. And I immediately started to work with Arthur Brown, and I was going for a number one hit.
What made you think that Fire would work well in this context?
I'd already written a song for Roger a couple of years ago called After the Fire, and while I was working on After Fire, I remember saying to myself, this is the last Fire song I'm ever going to write. It's all been said, it's all been done, every cliche in the book has been done. So I finished the album, and I said, I'm just not doing it, I'm not going to write it.
Seriously, you finished the Iron Man and you...
Yeah, and it had no fire in it, and everybody kept saying, but you've got to have a fire. And I said, the song that would be great would be something like Arthur Brown's Fire, you know, because it's just... Fire, 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 fire. And they wanted The Who to record a track as The Who and for it to be on that record in time for the tour. And it felt appropriate to use it because I felt so close to the song.
Fire from The Who on Pete Townsend's The Iron Man LP. He produced the original track in 1968, and his band is performing it in 1989. Pete, this brings us to the final portion of the program, and maybe we should go out with another track from The Iron Man. I'd suggest All Shall Be Well.
Well, All Shall Be Well would be a good one to go out on. I think what's interesting about All Shall Be Well is it bridges the last... Really, I suppose the last 5 or 6 years of my life. It's a phrase from Mother Julian of Norwich, an English nun who was canonised, in which she said, all shall be well and all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well. And I was just really deeply struck by it, and I just felt that, in a sense, it was such a great dictum for living, you know, the fact that what's important about doing good is detail. God looks after the big stuff, or nature, if you're not religious. You know, nature can look after Niagara Falls, the Antarctic, and space. What we can look after is little tiny details. It is important to call your mum. It is important. It is important to tidy your room. You know, it is important to make sure that you don't have too many drinks and kill somebody on the way home, or even scrape somebody's car. You know, it's those little details that we have control of. So the song is about that kind of fire, because the right thing leads to the right results and the wrong thing leads to the wrong results.
Well, let's listen then to All Shall Be Well from Pete Townsend's The Iron Man. Pete, thanks so much for your time. In the midst of so many other things, to sit down and speak in such a honest and contemplative way about rock and roll and seeing its effects, hopefully for the best.
I enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed it.
Good luck with the Iron Man and everything that comes after it.
Thanks a lot.
Pete Townsend, The Iron Age on Timothy White's Rock Stars. This program was produced exclusively for Westwood One by Andy Denmark and Timothy White. Executive producer Norm Pattiz. For their help, thanks go to Bill and Jackie Kirbishley, Left Field Services, Ann Weldon, Nicola Joss, David Knight, Atlantic Records, Peter Kupke, and Brian Griffith. And of course, we'd like to thank Pete Townsend not only for his time and his generous spirit, but for an entire career that has repeatedly set challenging new standards for creativity and candor in rock and roll. Timothy White's Rock Stars is based on the book Rock Stars by Timothy White, published by Crown Outlet Books. I'm Roger Steffens. Thanks for being with us. And keep listening for the next edition of Timothy White's Rock Stars from the Westwood One Radio Network.